The last speaker of this morning presentation is going to be David Howard. The title of his presentation is Maize Response to Weeds When Present Through Part or All of the Critical Weed Free Period. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank the organizers for giving me a chance to tell you about some of this work. And of course, I have to really thank all of you for toughing it out and sitting through my talk, even though knowing that the lunch line out there is probably growing by the second. Give me a few seconds. All right, so you're all still here. Okay, excellent. We all know that weeds have a negative impact on crop growth and yield. And it's always been assumed that the reason they do so is because they compete with the crops for resources, either light, nutrients, or water, or perhaps they might be producing phytotoxic chemicals that inhibit the growth of the crop plant. But there's some data, some observations that suggest that this might not necessarily be at least the entire story or the reason why weeds impact crop yield. And part of that comes from the observation that weeds can have a very significant impact on crop growth and yield very, very early in the growing season, far earlier than one would expect them to be capable of really significantly competing with the crops for nutrients or resources. So here we see a picture of a field taken by my colleague Sharon Clay, who did all the field work in South Dakota State. And here we have plants, corn plants growing at about the V6 stage. And these are some competing velvet leaf weeds that she had growing in between the rows. Now, even though it's clear that these velvet leaf plants are really too small to be really shading the corn plants at this stage, and they're really too far apart from the corn plants to be really competing for nutrients. In addition to that, it's early in the growing season. There's plenty of nitrogen. There's plenty of water in the soil. And it's unlikely that these weeds are really impacting those resources. Yet, when these weeds were removed very shortly after this picture was taken, they had already had an impact on the crop growth and yield, significant impacts in reducing both grain and stover at harvest. Another observation that suggests that resource competition is not the whole story is the phenomenon of the critical weed-free period. And being an agronomist, you're probably mostly pretty familiar with this. If weeds are present prior to the weed-free period and you can get rid of them, there's no real impact on yield. Likewise, if weeds come in later in the growing season after that critical weed-free period, they have no real impact on the crop growth and yield. Now, if they're competing for resources, you might expect this curve to be sort of more of a parabolic curve where the weeds have the longer the weeds are there, the greater impact they would have. However, this sharp sigmoidal curve is actually more indicative of a developmental switch occurring in response to some sort of a signal produced by the weeds. Now, these observations were well known by a brilliant weed scientist by the name of Clarence Swanton, and he did the critical experiment a few years back where he grew a corn plant in a pot and then surrounded that corn plant by pots of weeds. And these weeds were completely separated from the corn plant. They had their own drainage system. There's no way that they were going to be competing with this corn plant for nutrients or water. There's no way that they were going to be giving any allelopathic chemicals, at least any ones that might be soil soluble. And he chose weeds that weren't going to get much bigger than this, and the corn plant was soon going to be able to outgrow them, and they weren't really going to be significantly shading the crop plant or the corn plant. And yet, even under these conditions, that corn plant was significantly affected by those weeds. So what this means is that resource competition, although there might be some impact late in the season, that is probably not the primary mechanism through which weeds reduce crop yield. So the question, this opens up the opportunity, right? So if it's not competition for resources, but rather some sort of a developmental response or signal to the corn plant detecting those weeds, then perhaps we can either block the perception of that signal or block some of the downstream responses and make crop plants tolerant to weeds. So we wanted to try to understand what some of these signals or processes might be, and so we wanted to we chose to do a transcriptomics response or transcriptomic study to help us try to identify what sort of physiological processes or signaling processes might be affected by caused by the weeds in the corn plant. So what we did is we grew corn plants either with or without weeds. We did this for 2 years with different weeds each year, so we could avoid any problems with specific allelopathic chemicals being what we were looking at. We wanted a sort of a more general response. And we collected the leaf tips from plants at V8, so right at the end of that critical weed-free period. And we did that either for plants that were grown with weeds, without weeds, all the way through that V8 time period, or with plants where the corn plants were grown with weeds up to V4, so right at the beginning of that critical weed-free period, and then we removed the weeds and then still collected at V8. We used a random block design with 3 replicates per treatment, and we chose the leaf material, the terminal leaf material of the corn plant as our material, and we pooled material from 4 to 6 plants per block. Then we used we made tag libraries for those, ran a general Illumina sequencing experiment, and then mapped those reads back to the corn plant genome and looked to see which genes were differentially expressed. Now, we did we had pretty good read or yield on our transcriptomics, and we had generally about 70% to 80% of our fragments mapped uniquely back to the corn genome, which was nice. However, we didn't see very many differentially expressed genes, and there's a reason for that, and that is because we were looking at this under field conditions between years, and much of the statistical analysis that are done with these transcriptomic studies, you're really careful to avoid false positives, and therefore some of the technology that's used is really susceptible to noise in the background. And these were field conditions. But we still were able to see some genes that were differentially expressed. We had about 500 genes that were upregulated in 2007, almost 1,000 that were upregulated or differentially regulated, in 2008, but not very many of them that were commonly differentially regulated between both years. Likewise, when we looked at the genes that were different from the controls in those plants where the weeds were removed early in the critical weed-free period, as one would expect, we saw a lot less genes being differentially regulated, and very, very few, in fact, just one gene that was commonly differentially regulated between 2007 and 2008. So let's take a look at the genes that were differentially regulated in both years. Among the upregulated genes, we have a couple of genes that are involved in Photosystem 2 reaction center, both protein C and protein D were upregulated consistently. Looking at some of the downregulated genes, we see a gene here, phosphoenolpyruvate carboxylase 3. This is was a good gene to see because we had seen this gene being differentially expressed in some earlier microarray studies that were similarly performed. We also have a gene regulator of chromosome condensation, RCC1 family protein. This gene is involved in chromatin condensation and epigenetic marking of the chromatin, which can have an impact on gene regulation. And in addition to that, there was a rather interesting homeobox protein 31. And this gene is differentially expressed in Arabidopsis in response to cold and biotic stress. And it has a role in growth and development and also in long-dead regulated flowering. So although we don't have very many genes here that are differentially regulated, we do have some potential target genes that we can look at for manipulating the response of the corn plant to the weeds. But there is another technique that we have available to us. So this doesn't really give us much an idea of the physiology that's going on, just a few potential target genes. Fortunately, there is another technology called gene set enrichment analysis that allows us to look not just at individual genes, but at groups of genes. And because this technology is such that you tend to want to really avoid false positives, you have also a whole lot of false negatives, and the gene set enrichment analysis allows you to sort of look at clusters of genes involved in the same processes, and it's a little less susceptible to this, the problem of false positive or false negatives. So we did that. Oh, I should say this is the gene that was differentially regulated early in the growing season when the weeds were present. But so gene set enrichment analysis. This is, I know you probably can't see very much of this, so I color coded it. The top yellow part here. These are all biotic defense response or responses that were overrepresented among upregulated genes in response to weeds. You have a lot of genes that are things like defense response, salicylic acid response, genes involved in response to bacteria and fungi, and also genes involved in jasmonic acid signaling, which is indicative of wounding responses from chewing insects and things like that. Additional to that, there are some classic genes that one might expect to see involved in hormone responses, such as ethylene responses, ABA responses, and more importantly, some auxin responses and gibberellic acid responses. And we kind of expected to see those genes being differentially expressed, or those processes being differentially affected, because those are processes involved that have been associated with shade avoidance responses in other plants at other times. Looking at the genes that are downregulated, we see a lot of genes involved in protein biosynthesis and nitrogen use. In addition to that, we see genes involved in photosynthesis responses are being strongly repressed when the weeds are present. And I'd also point out there's a couple of ontologies or processes that we were sort of surprised to see because we had not seen them before in earlier studies. And that was cellular responses to nitrogen starvation and cellular responses to phosphate starvation. Now, I'd like to remind you that these plants probably were not experiencing these, but they're clearly detecting those weeds and they're gearing up the processes to deal with potential starvation down the road. When we look at the genes that were induced by weeds early in the growing season, even though those weeds were removed, we still see some changes in gene expression that were resulting from those weeds, or processes that were resulting from those weeds. In particular, we still see a couple of defense response genes, particularly the salicylic acid response. Not much really other things there going on that sort of gave us much clue as to what was happening. But when we looked over here at the genes that were downregulated, we see that there's sort of a rebound effect from when those weeds were removed in the response of the gene, the responses to jasmonic acid signaling. Additional to that, we see a rebound in the processes in most of those hormone responses, which is sort of interesting. Some of the things that did sort of stay around, though, were the nitrogen and some of the protein responses were still downregulated. But of course, we were really interested in what happens early in that growing season when the weeds are present that is sort of maintained after those weeds are removed, after that critical weed-free period. So we wanted to look at sort of a intersection between those two previous data sets, and very few ontologies or processes were affected. But one of them that really is critical is the defense response and salicylic acid response. So when weeds are present, even very early in the growing season, they seem to induce this defense response, and that defense response is maintained well after those weeds are removed. And salicylic acid is, overexpression of salicylic acid or overaccumulation of salicylic acid is known to greatly inhibit plant growth and yield. So this might be one of the major processes that is affected by weeds that long-term affects overall indices and yield. In addition to that, we still see also some processes such as the nitrate transport and response to nitrate that is permanently impacted by those weeds, even though that they were removed very early in the growing season. And that probably has an impact. Both of those two things probably is the reason why we see ontologies such as regulation of cell size and regulation of meristem growth. Now, I might point out also, not only have we seen this now in corn, but in an earlier study in soybean, we also saw these same salicylic acid responses being upregulated by weeds early in the growing season. So our conclusions are, yes, we were able to detect differences using RNA-seq, and that some of those differences allowed us to get a handle on some of the physiological responses. Particularly, we observed that some of the photosynthetic responses that were induced by weeds early on in the or when the weeds were present, those sort of required the weeds to be there in order to be observed continuously. So once those weeds are removed, those responses tend to rebound or come back. Same is true for many of the auxin and or the hormone responses. The biotic stress responses seem to be some of the key responses that seem to be maintained throughout the growing season after those weeds are removed. So with that, I'd like to thank the people that have worked with me on this. Of course, my colleagues, collaborators Dr. Sharon and David Clay, their graduate students and assistants, Stephanie Hansen, Janet Marillis, some folks at Stoneville, Mississippi, and also at the Keck Center of Illinois for helping us do some of the sequencing, the folks at iPlant Collaborative, and NDSU for helping me with some of the bioinformatics stuff, and also my colleagues at the USDA-ARS in Fargo, who have, of course, helped me discuss some of this data and do some of the analysis. So with that, I guess I will take any questions. All right, so interestingly, so the corn and soybean were very different. Well, they had some similarities, but there were also some differences. With the soybeans, which I assume are broadleaves, more like some of the vegetable crops, it was a very clear indications of shade avoidance responses. So genes involved in phytochrome signaling were really strongly indicated in the soybean. And we didn't see that so much in the corn. So my guess is that for the vegetable crops, if we did a similar experiment, we'd probably see a lot more shade avoidance response genes being induced. Yes?
Thank you, Professor Spiegel. It didn't surprise me much that there's no large difference between the wheat and the contour. Because in the contour, the plants are also perceiving genes from the neighbor plants.
From the neighbor plants, right.
Yes. And then, how do you reconcile with?
All right, so we actually have done some of those studies too, although I didn't have the chance to talk about them here, where we did look at changes, at least with corn, at normal density and at double density. These are some older microarray studies that have been published. And it was interesting because although we saw some of the changes common that we observed here, one of the things we noticed was that when corn was competing with itself, it didn't seem to have as much of an impact on the photosynthetic processes. In fact, the phosphenyl pyruvate gene was just the opposite when it was competing with weeds relative to when it was competing with itself. So there are probably some processes where the plant sort of recognize self and respond to itself differently than it does to other species. And it'll be fun teasing some of that data out. All right, so there's so we know that whatever the primary signal is that we're looking at here can be transmitted through the air, right? So the most likely is light, certainly that's the case in soybean, that almost certainly it's a ratio of red to far red light that seems to be the critical signal. But there's also the possibility of volatiles. And you notice that jasmonic acid response that was present when the weeds were there, JA is a volatile signal, has been known to be involved in plant-plant communication in response to insect attack. And that's also a strong possible signal that might be there. So, and again, next 5 years are going to be some interesting studies on trying to tease out exactly what those signals are, which ones are, and my guess is there's probably more than one. There's some data that suggests it's going to be a little bit more complicated than just a simple response. Yes?
Your final idea is to silence the
gene. Yes. Potentially so, right? So if we silence something that's way upstream, it depends on where those signals come together, right? So if you have biotic stress, a pathogen attack, following one signal transduction process that gets to the salicylic acid induction, and then you have a different signal perception and response from weeds that gets to that same point, as long as you can break one and not the other, you're okay. But if we get too close to that, or if there's overlap in those, yeah, we could inhibit the plant's ability to respond to biotic stress. And that could have some potential negative impacts. Hopefully they're it's that situation and not that situation.
All right, great. Thank you very much.